Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? You are here live, and this is the Boxing Source Radio Show. I am your host, James Bell, lead boxing analyst for the Cohort Truth on Sports and the leader of the Boxing Source on social media. You can follow us on Facebook, the Boxing Source, on Instagram, the Boxing Source, and on Twitter, search for the Boxing Source or Boxing Source 2. Number to dial in is 347-237-5539. Once again, that is 347-237-5539. Press the 1 key to get on queue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. We got about a 1 hour segment that we're going to try to do here. Talking about, you know, the action that went down over the weekend. I had a few title fights that did happen. you had a main event that was on Friday night that was seen on ESPN, and also we had action on Saturday within the middleweight division, which will be the focus or the main topic of today's show. Is what happened in the middleweight division and the state of the middleweight division. But we want to, you know, get things started off with what happened in the lightweight division, as you had Richard Comey taking on Raymundo Beltran. That was on Friday on ESPN, and this was for the IBF version of the lightweight title. We know about the situation with the WBC version of the lightweight title, as unified champion Vasyl Lomachenko, you know, will be squaring off against Luke Campbell. That's supposed to be scheduled for August. So we're going to be seeing that later on in the summer. And then, like I said, you have Richard Comey, you know, taking on Raymundo Beltran. And, you know, that was, you know, basically a fight we had. Like I said, a former WBO champion Ray Beltran, you know, he was able to win the world title, but eventually lost it in his first defense of that title. So this was like his second go round to try to win a world title against Richard Comey. And we know that Comey was able to win this IBF belt that was vacated beforehand. So he was going ahead to try to make his first defense of that belt. And this one had, you know, some action in the first round. It was a, you know, fairly action-packed fight in a few spurts that they had out there. So, you know, in the first round, you basically saw Richard Comey being the aggressor right off the bat, coming forward against Ray Beltran and catching him off guard really quickly. And he was able to score a couple knockdowns there in the first round, and it seemed like it was going to be a a very quick fight. But, pretty much in around the last minute of that first round, you had Ray Beltran pretty much catching up, catching his wind, and then catching Richard Comey when he could, and kind of like threw him back there for a little bit. So he was able to weather the initial storm by Richard Comey there in the first round before continuing on there in the fight. But it pretty much was like a precursor to what was in store for the rest of the fight. Of course, Reed Beltran is, fairly advanced in age, so he had to basically, show that either he still had a little bit left, or if this was, pretty much the pinnacle for his career. He did have his spurts where if he was able to take his time and kind of like concentrate and see where Richard Comey was going, he was, having a little bit of success. But also, he had some issues being there and close with Richard Comey. Of course, he had a, he has a knack of, clashing, having head clashes with a lot of his opponents. So you did have that issue there with Richard Comey and Raymundo Beltran. So the thing about it is that, with those issues that Beltran had to deal with, that kind of like threw him off for a little bit as far as like messing around with his concentration and focusing on what Richard Comey was going to do there in the ring. But, for me, I just saw this particular fight as, something where Richard Comey would, have a fairly notable opponent on his record if he was able to, handle business and take care of business. And, like I said, on multiple, occasions there, you had Raymundo Beltran pretty much in trouble. But, he was able to, one way or another, find his way through this, through those rounds and kind of like have something to throw a Richard Comey off a little bit to kind of, stay in the fight some sort. But, later on down in the fight, you kind of like seeing that there was a major slowdown within Raymundo Beltran. And, it was something where he just couldn't, keep up with the constant pressure that Richard Comey had up against him. And so going into those later rounds, like round five, Richard Comey scored another knockdown in round five. And Beltran was able to get up from that. But, like I said, that was kind of like the precursor to what was happening or going to happen later on there in the fight. So what you had there was, a case of, Ray Beltran just, not being able to handle the overall pressure of Richard Comey. And he eventually got broke down. And in round eight, Richard Comey scored another knockdown. And you had Ray Beltran. He was able to, get up from that and got a standing eight count from the referee there. And the referee was checking on Ray Beltran. And, he was up and he kind of like seemed like he was okay. But, the referee, had seen the amount of punishment that Ray Beltran was taking over the course of the fight, and he made the decision to stop the fight. And, you know, under the rules there in the state of California, it was awarded a KO victory for Richard Comey, and he defends that IBF lightweight title there and moves to 29 wins and 2 losses, with 26 of those wins coming by knockout or technical knockout. And for Ray Beltran, that is 9th loss of his professional career. And, you know, like I said, I mean, he, you know, seemed like he had a couple of times where he was game, but it only happened when, you know, he was in some fair trouble there against Richard Comey. So, you probably see, that's the last we'll probably see him as a, a serious competitor there in the lightweight division. He's, been a tough fighter for, a long time, for, many years or so. But, in this particular case, he just couldn't stop the, onslaught that was taking place there from Richard Comey. And so for Comey, he keeps that title. He's, looking ahead to a potential fight with lightweight contender Teofimo Lopez. And, that particular fight would be a very action-packed fight. Of course, Teofimo Lopez is, one of the hottest fighters there in the lightweight division, or in those divisions that are, under 140 pounds. So that, we're going to see if they do make that fight, then that will be Teofimo Lopez's first chance to win a world title. And, they're kind of like trying to arrange things there in the lightweight division so that you may have an undisputed lightweight champion either by the end of this year or pretty much by the first quarter of next year. Like I was mentioning before, you have, WBO and WBA lightweight champion Vasyl Lomachenko trying to go after the vacant WBC lightweight title against Luke Campbell later this summer. And you have the IBF champion there and Richard Comey, going later on down the line, going to be fighting Teofimo Lopez. Teofimo gets through his next fight, which is coming up within a month or probably about 6 weeks from now. So that is kind of like the situation there within the lightweight division right now. For Comey, I mean, this is, I think it's a pretty good achievement for Comey here. Being able to, first of all, win the lightweight title, number one. And then, number two, being able to defend that lightweight title, here in his first defense of that IBF version of the lightweight title. My thing is that if that, gets him to be lined up with a fairly good main event that'll happen there with Teofimo Lopez, that's pretty much going to be a fairly well-attended, a very competitive fight. So that's something there that I'm kind of like looking towards, is to see how Richard Comey is there going to be against Teofimo Lopez. Of course, Teofimo Lopez has that very good combination of speed and power there in the lightweight division. in that, you know, it was able to, you know, he's able to put both of those things together to, you know, come up with very good and spectacular knockouts in a good number of his previous fights. So I'm kind of like looking forward to seeing what Teofimo Lopez will be able to do here against this veteran in Richard Comey, so that, you know, we'll be able to see if he'll be Lopez will be able to win his first world championship, or if Richard Comey is able to score the win there. You know, for other things that I'm like kind of like looking into, there is, you know, what I would say is, like, you know, what happened also on Saturday is, you know, we had, you know, two fights that were there in the middleweight division. And two fights that, you know, were kind of fairly significant with top fighters there in the middleweight division. The first fight that I'm going to kind of like focus on is the fight between Demetrius Andrade and Macy Selecki for the WBO version of the middleweight title. Of course, you have Andrade that was able to win the WBO middleweight title after it was, you know, basically vacated last year. He did have one defense earlier this year against Artur Akhovov and was able to get a TKO victory there. And here he went on ahead to face Macy Selecki. Selecki, who had been a guy that had, you know, challenged other top middleweights out there, including Daniel Jacobs there. And then and that fight was last April over at the Barclays Center between Jacobs and Selecki. He lost that fight by a unanimous decision, got floored late in that fight. He was, you know, fairly competitive for most of those rounds, but, you know, Jacobs ended up being a better fighter in that one and, you know, just ended up getting that decision victory to defeat Macy Selecki. Later on down in Selecki's career, particularly this year, in March 15th over in Philadelphia, he fought Gabe Rosado, pretty much a hometown type of fight for Gabe Rosado. He was, you know, the better boxer in this particular fight. And he, you know, also had like the power behind his punches. Of course, Gabe Rosado had been in a lot of wars, and, you know, had the record that pretty much showed that, you know, he had his, you know, good number of shortcomings. But in the late portions of those fights, you know, Selecki ended up being down on the canvas in round 9. And it was, you know, almost a shocking comeback victory for Gabe Rosado. But Selecki was able to get past that, get the decision win, and position himself to challenge Demetrius Andrade for the WBO middleweight title. And, you know, with this particular fight, you know, it's just Andrade, you know, trying to stay busy for me until he positions himself to either get a fight for the, you know, unified middleweight titles or undisputed middleweight titles or, you know, whatever you want to call it. But I'll be able to get into a more detail about that a little bit later. The thing about it is that, I mean, for me, you know, I kind of like see Demetrius Andrade as a guy that, you know, doesn't really kind of like do things very impressively. That's kind of like been his moniker or his MO, especially with him moving up to the middleweight division. He had been a, you know, previous champion over in the junior middleweight or super welterweight divisions, but didn't necessarily have the kind of like the career defining fight or the big fight that would kind of like define him against, other guys that were like top contenders there in the middleweight division. The super welterweight division, that is. My thing about it was that, here against Maciej Slecki, it was just something where he could, stay busy or keep busy until, he positioned himself for a big fight. He had been talking about, going up against Canelo Alvarez later this year. Of course, there is that date of September that Canelo usually, has his fights. But for Demetrius Andrade, he wanted to, kind of like make his name and kind of like stamp it for him to see if he'll be the unified middleweight champion and kind of like say that he is the best middleweight that's out there. We had his couple of instances where he would be showcasing his overall skills. But, against Maciej Slecki, I just think that, he had that, that first round knockdown, and it looked like this was going type of fight, like his fight against Walter Kostendakwa for, at the time, the vacant WBO title. But he went on ahead and did the whole little trying to impress through the boxing skills and everything like that, and ended up getting a shutout unanimous decision, 120-107, to keep that WBO title. For me, that was what I got out of it. He just was in there to get some rounds in and say it's me again one more time. And that's what I got out of that fight there. We got a caller in here from the 646. Tell us your name, where you're calling from.
Yo, what's good, J-Hart? This is Matt from the Bronx. You already know what it is, man. I'm trying to figure out, what's next for Charlo and for Andrade. I heard you talking about Andrade's performance against Lucky. I thought Andrade did pretty good, He wasn't exciting. He's never exciting, but I didn't think he was boring. He did what he had to do. He shut him out. He made him look like an amateur, basically. And Sulecki, I guess, was decently regarded by some boxing fans. So it was good to see Andre get a victory against decent competition. Now, on Charlo, I see the narrative is Charlo somehow struggled, even though he won just about every round, but he somehow struggled, just because he didn't get the knockout. But both guys want to fight Canelo or Triple G. It seems Canelo and Triple G are not interested in fighting them. So what do you think is next for each guy?
Well, for me, I was talking about the thing with Demetrius Andrade getting his win over Maciej Slecki. And, I see him wanting to try to go after Canelo Alvarez in September. He says he would have probably get himself to be ready by that time. And so he would, want to try to say that, I want to be in that position to, fight for the unified titles and such. But as you did kind of like hint at with Jamal Charlo, he ended up getting the win over Brandon Adams. And apparently, that particular instance, you had Jamal Charlo being named the WBC middleweight champion.
And, you know, for some people that, you know, of course, they would have probably known by now, but it's like, wait a minute. How is Jamal Charlo the WBC middleweight champion? Well, because the WBC announced that Saul Canelo Alvarez, a.k.a. El Campeón, is not the WBC middleweight champion. No, 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 no. Not just the middleweight champion. He is the WBC franchise middleweight champion. You're like, franchise? What is this, like Shane Douglas or something? Like, what's going on here? So I guess you have, what is it, like you have a WBC diamond champion, and now you have a WBC franchise champion, and Canelo Alvarez for the middleweight division is the WBC franchise champion. What are your quick thoughts about that there, Matt?
Honestly, I wasn't expecting to be blindsided by this WBC slander on your part, man. I think what really happened is the WBC mandatory was going to get called. Because, you know, Charlo as interim champion is a de facto mandatory for Canelo. I think Canelo really showed no interest in fighting him. So I think what really happened is the WBC stripped Canelo of the middleweight title, but they didn't want to embarrass Canelo publicly, so they came up with this, like, honorary declaration so that Canelo could save face publicly. That's what I really think happened.
Well, I mean, what about, you know, him, you know, being a franchise champion? Does that still mean that he has to pay fees to the WBC for holding that franchise belt?
Well, it's not really a belt. Here's what they said about the franchise champion. They said that he is going to be required. He's going to be required to do, like, I think, like, 2 charity events per year for them. Basically, the designation is not transferable to any fighter, and it's only exclusive to the fighter that receives it, meaning that if you beat Canelo, you don't become the franchise champion. Also, the franchise champion will be designated as the WBC Emeritus Champion once he retires from boxing. The franchise champion will proudly represent the WBC in every single fight as a reigning WBC champion, and this is regardless of any specific conditions or titles being associated with all future fights. So basically, Canelo is champion for life.
Pretty much, yep.
Yeah, the WBC will approve through the franchise champion promoter every opponent scheduled to fight. So basically, anyone Canelo wants to fight, it has to get run by the WBC first. This is very interesting.
You know, kind of like the way that you explained it is that, you know how, like you said, in reference to Canelo having to adhere to the rules and such of the WBC as his champion, and that, you know, like you were saying, he would have probably been due the mandatory since, you know, he had been the WBC champion pretty much since, you know, I would say, what, September or so last year or whatever it is. So, you know, he had that pretty much time of 12 months that was going to be coming up where he would have to make that defense of the WBC middleweight championship. you know, like you were saying, I mean, that pretty much should probably cover it. I mean, either you be like, you know what, either, you know, I'm not going to be the champion, I'm going to move up, which was one of the supposed suggestions. It was that he would, in September, go ahead and move up to face Callum Smith for Callum Smith's WBA Super Championship instead of, you know, keeping the WBC middleweight champion or whatever it is. Or, I don't know, man, maybe they would have went the Floyd Mayweather route and made him a double champion in two different divisions at the same time.
Well, he could be a champion in any division he wants. One interesting thing to note about this, well, two interesting things. It says that if the franchise champion goes to another division and beats the WBC champion in that division, then the title becomes vacant for another contender. And they also said that if the franchise champion loses, the winner automatically becomes the mandatory for whoever the champion is in that division.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of like a, you know, weird set of events, weird set of circumstances for, you know, that particular instance. It's almost like, you know, like you were saying in reference to Canelo, it's pretty much like a, what it would be, like a champion emeritus status, whatever it is.
Yeah. He's champion for life in every division. So if he wanted to fight Deontay Wilder right now, they would sanction it, basically. It's like, I don't know what to say, man. I really don't. I like Canelo. You know, that's my guy. I like the
right.
WBC. But this is, it's pretty, it's indefensible on its face. Because I don't like the lying to the public thing. Just say Canelo didn't want to make his mandatory against Charlo and you guys stripped him. Just say it. Like, we know what it
yeah.
is. He's not
you know what
fight
the situation
Charlo.
Is. Yeah.
It, to me, it's bad for Charlo because he was entitled to that 45% curse split. And now he's not going to get that. And 45% against Canelo, it would be the biggest payday that he'll probably have for his entire career. And now
yeah.
he's not going to get that anymore. So I feel terrible for Charlo because not only does he miss out on that payday, because people are, like, hate the PBC so much and they hate the WBC so much, it's like they don't understand that Charlo actually got screwed out of this. But yet they're basically saying that Charlo's not a real champion. No, he is a real champion. The champion didn't want to fight him. He was interim, and he got stripped. But no one is framing it that way. They're framing it as if Charlo was gifted a championship that he didn't deserve. Like, I don't get it.
Well, I mean, the thing is that they were talking about, you know, the whole situation of him moving up and facing who he fought. But, you know, either way, he was the former, you know, champion. So all he did was basically, you know, move up and get that opportunity. And that's pretty much, you know, what it was. So that's kind of like how they framed it. And, you know, that's what, you know, and that's the situation with the WBC rules. It's pretty much the same with, you know, all of the other organizations, like, you know, we just, you know, talked about the, you know, situation with Oleksandr Usyk. With him, you know, being the former undisputed cruiserweight champion, he, you know, made his announcement to move up the middleweight, heavyweight, and, you know, that kind of, like, got him to the spot where he'll be able to fight for the WBO championship if he, you know, wanted to. So, that's kind of like what I got out of that. You know.
Yeah, it's just the same for Charlo though, man. I mean, you would hope he gets a big fight. I don't see it. I was looking at the middleweight rankings, for the WBC because you know they're going to end up naming a mandatory soon. Now that Canelo isn't champion, they're actually probably going to call the mandatory. So looking at the mandatory situation, you got Golovkin ranked number one. He's not going to fight Charlo. They already ordered Golovkin, like, I think, two times to fight Charlo, and
already,
he turned it down inside.
Yeah, they already ordered that.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. Danny Jacobs is probably not going to fight Charlo because he's talking about moving up in weight. So the next up in the rankings is some guy named Kamil Cerameta. Who is that guy? I've never heard of him. You know, so even if he is a good fighter, because no one over here has ever heard of him, guess what? It's not going to be a big money fight. Apparently, he is a Polish fighter, which I guess is good because maybe you can attract some people in New York with a Polish fighter. He's 19-0, but he only has 4 knockouts. No power. Like, come on, man. This guy, he's the EBU middleweight champion. It's just nothing for Charlo.
Yeah.
You know, Derevyanchenko has no reason to fight Charlo because he is of the IBF mandatory. So he really has no reason to fight Charlo. He could wait for the IBF to call his mandatory. Hopefully Canelo, you know, fights him. You know, and then who? Jason Quigley? Who cares? Steven Butler, who? Estevia Falcao, who? Luis Arias, boring. Hassan Adam, boring. Liam
well,
Williams,
he done already got
boring.
One.
Yeah. You know, he has nobody to fight. No, like, literally nobody to fight that's going to make him money. So, honestly, I think maybe Al has to maybe see if he can get a guaranteed deal from the zone for a couple fights. Maybe get like a guaranteed maybe $10 million fight deal with the zone, and maybe the zone will let him fight one of the middleweights. But even that.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing about it is, though, is. The only thing is, though, is that didn't they already have, like, well, no, not really through the zone, though. They had an offer through Matchroom.
Yeah.
Basically fight under Matchroom. And,
yeah, but,
you know,
but
that kind of
like sign with Matchroom? What has Hearn done for Demetrius Andrade? Andrade can't get a fight either. Not only is he with Matchroom, he's on the zone. The zone has the cash cow middleweight, and even he can't get a fight. So it's like, what the hell is going on in the middleweight division? You know, people talk about the welterweight, people talk about the heavyweight, but to me, the two divisions where these guys at the top need to fight each other, middleweight and light heavyweight, and they're not fighting each other.
Yeah, it's a bad situation there with the middleweight division. Out there because, you know, like you were saying, I mean, you got like everybody there that's available, you know, that would be there ready to fight each other, but they're not fighting each other. And that's a problem, you know? So,
yes,
I'm like, I don't understand, you know, why it's kind of like, you know, to that situation there, you know what I mean? So, you know, that's what I got out of that. I think I came in a little bit after I talked about the lightweight title fight that happened between Richard Comey and Ray Beltran, and I pretty much said that it's basically the end of the line for Ray Beltran after him, you know, losing that fight by knockout to Richard Comey, where he got floored multiple times, moved like 4 times over 8 rounds, you know, and so. You know, you got Comey that's pretty much being positioned to fight Teofimo Lopez later on this year, with Lopez having a fight coming up within the next 6 weeks or so before he could be, you know, positioned to fight for that idea of lightweight title. So what are your thoughts about Comey, though, in general?
I think he's a good fighter, decent power. You know, some people thought that he beat Robert Easter. You know, actually, a lot of people thought that he beat Robert Easter. I wasn't one of them. I thought that the fight could have went either way. I wasn't mad that Easter got the decision. He's a good fighter, good power. I don't think he has anything for my man Teofimo Lopez. You know, let's see. Let's just wait and see what he does. Hopefully he can draw some type of fans. He actually lives in the Bronx, which is pretty funny. He actually lives not too far from me. Haven't seen him in a while, though. I'm interested to see if he is going to fight Teofimo Lopez, you know, or if he's going to try to maybe get an exemption, fight someone else, because he didn't seem like he wanted to fight Lopez when they broached him about it before. And then you saw basically Arum lobby the IBF to get Lopez in the final eliminator. So does he want to fight Lopez? We're going to have to see. You know, I don't know.
Right. Yeah, I don't know either, because it was almost like, you know, at first they wanted to put Richard Comey there in the ring against Vasyl Lomachenko, but, you know, right after Comey won the IBF title, he had an injury, so they couldn't really, you know, position that particular fight to happen. You know, it was supposed to happen around April, I think it was. But, you know, other than that, you know, they kind of just wanted to see if they could, you know, have Comey have one fight once he, you know, got back from his injury and recovered from that. And then, you know, the next time over, he would just, be able to just fight for that, the Unified Championship out there. So that's kind of like how they, you know, position this thing here in the lightweight division. That covered most of the things that, you know, I wanted to talk about. Of course, you had the fights that were on Sunday where you had, you know, El Chacal, the Jackal, Guillermo Rigondeaux against Julio Ceja, and Jamel Charlo against Jorge Cota. And, you know, Rigondeaux had a pretty action-packed fight there against Julio Ceja. And what kind of surprised me was some of the reactions after that fight was saying, like, okay, now it seems like Guillermo Rigondeaux is really slowed down because he isn't, you know, he wasn't that defensive in this particular fight. And, you know, at least, you know, then, you know, while we're, you know, live, while watching the fight, you were like, nah, this is kind of like, you know, a different type of approach from Guillermo Rigondeaux to kind of like make things more, you know, action-packed so that more people would be interested in seeing him fight later on down the line. And also, you know, having other fighters being interested in fighting him because, you know, maybe, you know, they would have the idea that he is slowing down a little bit or whatever it is. You know, so that's kind of, you know, what I was getting from this particular fight that he had against Julio Ceja. And, you know, we just caught him with that one punch and put him down to the canvas. And, you know, that was pretty much it. But, you know, I just, you know, felt that was a, you know, better fight than, you know, people pretty much expected it to be.
Yeah, but Rigondeaux can't win with the boxing public, man. I'm telling you, Bob Arum and Dan Rafael really ruined this man's career. And I honestly don't think he can recover from it. You know, like, people were saying his legs are shot. Oh, look, he's got a hit. If he wants to fight, he wasn't trying to move. He literally, as soon as the round started, got in the middle of the ring. Let's go toe-to-toe. He wasn't even trying to move. So I don't know how anyone can say his legs are shot when he didn't try to use his legs. He, stylistically, you can see he wanted to fight differently. He wanted to go toe-to-toe. He probably knew that he was the harder, sharper puncher, and eventually he was going to get that guy the hell out of there. Now, I didn't really care for the stoppage. I thought it was a British stoppage. But you know what?
Yeah.
It is what it is. He got the stoppage. He won the fight. And now he moves on to fight Ray Vargas.
Yeah, that's going to be, you know, that's going to be, you know, a fight of sorts that, you know, we're that I'm kind of interested in. But I would be, like, I would want to see, like, how that fight, you know, basically turns out because, you know, Ray Vargas is, you know, a very, like, a very rangy, you know, kind of, like, fighter for that particular weight class. And yeah. I'd like to see how, you know, Rigondeaux would approach that particular fight, you know, as this one here. It might be, like, a little bit different than, you know, what he did against
Ray Vargas. I would do the same thing against Ray Vargas that I did against Seha. Try to fight the fight toe-to-toe because he has shorter arms than Ray Vargas. And Ray Vargas ain't really got a chin like that either. So to me, if Rigondeaux was to really just like go toe to toe, fight him on the inside, I think Rigondeaux to get him the hell up out of there too.
Yeah, yeah, I would try to, you know, do that too against Ray Vargas. Just get him in the you know, I would say in the nitty gritty, and
yeah,
make it,
man,
a dirty type of fight or whatever it is. So, you know, that would kind of, you know, try to, like, see how tough Ray Vargas is, you know?
Yeah.
If he's able to do that and, you know, make Vargas, you know, I would say, you know, go after it, then why not challenge him? You know, I would say. So I just go ahead and go for that. If I was Guillermo Rigondeaux facing,
yeah,
Ray Vargas out,
yeah,
there. That's, you know, that's what I got on that potential fight there. For those listening in on Blog Talk Radio Live, if you want to get in on the boxing talk, you could call in at 347-237-5539. Once again, that's 347-237-5539, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. Pretty much don't have much going on this coming Saturday. Everything is that next weekend. You do have,
yeah,
Rob Brent going up against Ryota Murata. You got Shakur Stevenson over in New Jersey going to be facing a replacement opponent, Franklin Manzanilla.
Yeah.
You got, of course, one heavyweight fight that,
wait,
you know, a good number of people
Manzanilla?
Are talking about. Franklin Manzanilla.
Isn't that the guy that fought Vargas in February that put Vargas down in the second round?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. So he's moving up to 126 to fight Shakur. Okay. Interesting.
Well, I mean,
fight.
That's what they got.
He got good power,
though.
He got good power, though.
Yeah.
The dude got, like, I think he has, like, 18 wins and 17 knockouts. So he does have,
mm-hmm,
good power, and he was able to put Vargas on his ass. You know, let's see if he could, you know, give Shakur a little bit of run.
Yeah, I'd be interested to seeing if he could, you know, do that, you know, myself, so that, you know, we'll see what he would be able to do against Shakur Stevenson. Of course, you know, Stevenson is, you know, very, very excited about it and looking forward to this particular fight. So, you know, that's what, you know, I'm basically getting off of this here, is that, you know, he just wants to go ahead and be in his hometown and, you know, kind of like showcase his skills and everything like that. So,
yeah,
that's what I kind of like get out of this fight.
It's a lot of fights that weekend, though, man. You got Du Bois versus Gorman for the British heavyweight title. That's going to be crazy. You got my guy Joe Joyce against Brian Jennings. And then, of course, you got Robert Hellenius versus Gerald Washington. I think Ray Vargas is fighting that weekend too against Kamita. So it's a big fight weekend, you know, the 12th and the 13th.
Yeah, yeah, those 2 days are, you know, fairly active there in the sport of boxing. So that's kind of like what I'm kind of like seeing and looking forward to there for that weekend. But, you know, the
this coming weekend here on the 6th is, not really. Yeah, it's just absolutely nothing there.
Bali must be blowing the waiver in Kazakhstan.
That's why.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah,
but what
exactly.
The hell is going on with Canelo, man? Who is Canelo going to fight? Is he going to fight Triple G? Is he going to fight Sergey Kovalev? We know he's not going to fight Callum Smith. We know that because Oscar and Eddie was going at each other this past weekend. So that's not going to happen. But who is Canelo going to fight?
Man, I do not know. I mean, I thought it would have been Callum Smith initially, once, Canelo had his win over Daniel Jacobs. But, after that, they kind of like switched up and everything, and they were talking about this whole thing about him fighting Sergey Kovalev. And so, right now, it kind of like looks like that Sergey Kovalev fight is more likely because, the thing with Gennady Golovkin, he's pretty much said that, if I'm fighting Canelo again, it ain't gonna be in Vegas. It ain't gonna be in Vegas, man. He's
fighting Canelo then.
Yeah, so he ain't fighting Canelo, right?
Yeah.
So that's what you pretty much have on that, and so that's what I'm pretty much getting off of. What Canelo's actions are. Is that
I want to see him fight Kovalev, man. I want to see him fight Kovalev so bad because honestly, I think he beats him.
I think he beat him. Yeah, right now at this stage, I think he beats Kovalev too. I don't think things that Kovalev had to have McGirt as his trainer. I don't think that would be enough for him. Kind of like make a significant difference. So that's, pretty much what you have off of it. So that's kind of like what I see from there, man. It's just like, he's going to end up fighting Kovalev. And if he's going to do that, then I would make that, I would make that announcement sooner rather than later, to kind of like help out the situation.
Definitely got to promote that. Nobody cares about Kovalev, really.
Nobody cares about Kovalev. And who was that? That wasn't November. Was it the Wilder Ortiz fight or the Wilder Stavern fight where they had the Kovalev fight in Madison Square Garden that same night?
That was November, so it had to be Severn. No. Was that November? Who did Kovalev fight? He fought, his name is blanking. He fought another Russian guy.
Yeah.
He fought another Russian guy that night. It was a crap fight. I know it was on HBO, and nobody watched it.
Nobody watched it.
It was Shabransky. That was in November.
Oh, yeah. That was later in November.
That wasn't it. Mikulin, the Mikulin fight.
Yeah.
That was March. That was the Ortiz fight.
March. The Ortiz fight. Why are you going to have an event with Sergey Kovalev over in Madison Square Garden when they got some at the Barclays Center at the same time? Come on, man.
Exactly. If anything, they should have asked if they could put that fight on the undercard.
Nah. They couldn't do that. Come on. You think Kathy Duva was going to do that? Nah.
Why not? Yo, these promoters need to work together, man. They need to work together because first of all, it's too many boxing events, man. They're going to end up oversaturating the market and making it less interesting. There's too many boxing events. Every promoter has their own event. It's too many events. And the cards that they're putting out are not worthy of spending money on. They're just not. Like, you had why could the Andrade and Charlo fight be on the same card? Because you have two garbage cards. At least if you would have had both of those guys on the same card, that would be a lot interesting. Maybe you could build towards having them fight each other. Now you have them two separate cards that really nobody was interested in. I know that allegedly Andrade sold out the Dunkin' Donuts Center with 7,000, but I've seen a Providence college basketball game. The Dunkin' Donuts Center holds like 13,000 people. So it's not a sellout for real. Maybe they sold out what they scaled the arena for, but if he could sell 12 to 13,000 tickets, I'm pretty sure they would have opened up the whole arena. So don't give me the sellout crap, you know? And even in Houston, Charlo would say he had a sellout. Dude, you didn't have a sellout. You sold whatever the capacity that they set it for. That's not really a sellout. You know, and these guys, they should be fighting on the same cards, man. It's just too much boxing. I love boxing, but I want to see quality cards and quality matchups, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I get you, man. I feel you on that. Definitely feel you on that one.
That's my favorite for July 20th, man. That Pacquiao Thurman card is the best card of the year. I'm telling you that right now. It has the best fight, top to bottom. A schedule for the whole year.
Hopefully they'll work on getting more cards, you know, with more action in those and more, you know, matchups that, you know, you would kind of like say, hey, I'm kind of like, you know, semi, I don't know who's going to come out and win in this fight, you know, so.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's what I'm pretty much getting out of it. But, you know, that mainly, like, covers everything that I wanted to cover in this version of the Boxing Source Radio Show. So we're going to, you know, start everything again on Sunday night to kind of, like, look forward to those fights that are coming up on the 12th and the 13th. And so, you know, just be on the lookout for, you know, any updates and things like that on the Boxing Source on Facebook and on Twitter and on Instagram there. So just be on the lookout for that. Big thanks to Matt from the Bronx calling into the show. And like I say at the end of every show, folks, more than boxing is hit and not get hit, not the standing trade. On that note, I'm out. Have a good evening, everybody.
Bomb squad, baby.